Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 240 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of February 8th, 2019. I am Chris Randazzo, and with me tonight, as always, is pudding enthusiast LeVon Ryan.
Now, Chris, that's the kind of pudding that only $240 can buy.
And special guest from Nintendo Fuse, Barry Carenza.
Yes, and I love me some $240 pudding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Not funny to anyone else but us.
Barry and LeVon jokes aside, it's time for us to sit down and deliver. Let's get ourselves all nice and professional. Because it's time to deliver our annual Geekade Stone Age Gamer State of the Union Address, where we'll talk about what's going on with the big three, and, you know, whatever the hell else we want to talk about, because that's how podcasts work. But before we go any further, here's your quickly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future. Just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener, or send us $240 worth of pudding. Oh, yeah.
We had the $240.
We had to have the pudding.
You
may ask yourself, Barry, where'd you get $240?
I just need a moment alone with the pudding.
Go off your jacket.
First it says cook, then chill. And that's what I do every night. First I cook, then I chill. Yeah,
Yeah, see, we're not even going into the love seat. We're just on pudding. Because it's our 240th episode. All right. Well, first and foremost, I want to talk with words. First and foremost.
You have the best words, Chris.
I do. This is already going exactly as well as you would expect it to. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to know that us having a guest named Barry on our 240th episode is purely coincidence and good fortune, nothing more. I will now be renaming Dan to LeVon for all future... I'm just kidding. He's Dan. But in my mind, my co-hosts tonight are Barry and LeVon, and that brings me no small amount of joy. So, gentlemen, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. As long as I get that pudding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, we are joined for our State of the Union by somebody I've known for several years. I don't even know how long. His name is Barry. Works for the site Nintendo Fuse. He's an industry analyst, an avid game collector, a gentleman named Barry. He's a biped. What else can you tell us about you, Barry?
I hope I'm a biped. Yes. Yeah, we've known each other for a very long time. Until then, you decided to move.
Yep.
And leave me all alone, you bastard. But no, you know, it's an honor to be here. I definitely appreciate it. See, for those of you listening that haven't been to NintendoFuse.com, you really should, but we have a show over there called Industry Talk, where I extended an invitation to Chris a couple years ago to be one of our first ever guests.
Jeez, was that years ago?
Yeah, it's been two and a half years now.
Good God.
Maybe, yeah. I extended this gracious opportunity. I said, you know, come on over, invitation. And he joined us, and we had a wonderful conversation. You can go to our YouTube channel and watch that, because that is actually video. So you could actually watch Chris and see him in all his wonderful glory, along with myself, as we discussed the gaming industry. But, yeah, he's like, oh, we're going to have you on. So, here I am, only a couple years later, but that's okay.
Better late than never, darn it.
Better late than never. I am so thrilled.
I can't believe like that was said, years ago.
Yeah, years ago. Time flies. Yeah, while we're looking out, I will actually look up when that episode aired, because it is something really special that it's taken that long. And I bugged you. I'm like, come on, Chris. Come on.
Yeah, and I kept, and I would just be like, yeah, sure, we'll have him on. It'll be great.
You know, we'll have you on. It's the same one thing of these days.
I told you the other day when we finally put the nails in this, like, it was, what, 3 years between Ollie's visits or something like that?
Yeah.
It was absolutely all right. Ridiculous.
So our episode aired May 16th, 2017. May 16th, 2017 it aired.
All right. That's so not as bad as I thought.
Almost two years. Almost. But yeah, definitely go check that out. Yeah, like you said, I'm an industry analyst, I'm game collector, and I write for Nintendo Fuse and I do videos for Nintendo Fuse, but I collect for everything. So I'm interested and excited to be here to discuss the industry as a whole. I mean, I host a show called The Industry, so it works.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us. Well, since you're our guest, we'll just do our little quick around the room. Usually we talk about what we've been playing, and I had a couple of things to mention, so why don't you go first, Barry? What have you been doing? What have you been playing?
Lately, I just finished Travis Strikes Again.
Oh, how is that?
It's not as good as the first two, naturally, but it's not as bad as reviewers are saying. It's funny. It's, you know, it's meta humor. It's fourth wall breaking. It's Suda 51. I mean, it does get monotonous, but it's worth chugging through, I think.
Yeah, if I was a little more financially solvent at the moment, it's been on my list of things to get for, you know, since they announced it, just because I support the heck out of anything with Travis Touchdown in it, but I just couldn't really afford to throw the money at it because I wanted to get the physical one and everything. It's just not in the budget for now.
If only you didn't move away, I'd lend it to you.
And then I'd play it with all my copious amounts of spare time.
But no, I did that. I did. I actually went back and did the Dragon Ball FighterZ story, or at least most of it, since they added like new characters, and that story is a chore to get through. It's terrible. And I love Dragon Ball Z, but it's a terrible story, and it's a terrible, boring fighting fest.
Yeah, it wasn't really... See, I didn't get to the point where it bored me, because I pretty much did, like, the first, I don't know, map, or, like, chunk, or whatever it was, and I was like, alright, I'm good. This is good enough for me. I bought the game like I said I would, I enjoyed it, and then I stopped. I haven't
come back. There's, like, 14 maps, and then you beat the first arc out of 3, and then there's like another 12 maps, and then the last one is like 18 maps or something, and I just didn't do the last.
It is super tedious.
I finished that first one and said, wait, there's more? No way. I just want to unlock Tien. That's all I want to do. But
I just want Tien. Yeah. It's tedious.
Yeah, so that's a chore. So I tried to get through that, but then I did Undertale, because one of my friends has been bugging me, you gotta do Undertale.
Yeah, I'm on that train too, I haven't started it yet, but people have been telling me for years I need to do that.
Yeah, so I didn't do a pass
through
this run,
but... It's not great.
Yeah, it's not...
It is, like it exists, it's there, it's fine, I don't...
Well, see, I made a deal with my friend. I said, look, I'm going to play Undertale because you're bugging me, but you got to play Doki Doki Literature Club, because I was bugging him. He got the better end of the stick, in my opinion.
He certainly did.
Great things about that game as well.
It is awesome, and it's like 2 hours long. So that is worth playing.
That's on the computers, though,
that's
right?
Only on PC, yeah. That's a PC exclusive, and it has to be. Then what else have I done? Kingdom Hearts 3. I've been in the middle of Kingdom Hearts 3.
Oh, yeah, that came out.
And I'm still playing Final Fantasy XIV. There's a bunch of new content coming to that game, and that's my MMO of choice. And strangely, I'm not a mobile gamer, but I've been hooked in Dragalia Lost from Nintendo, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, one of those things I wouldn't mind checking out if I had the time.
That and Pokemon Go I still occasionally do. So
I just got to the spot in Pokemon, let's go, yay, Pikachu, that's it, let's go Pikachu. That lets you transfer your Pokemon from Go.
Oh, nice.
Like, all right, cool. So I transferred them in there. I didn't realize I also had to catch them to get them into my party, and then they're all, like, super low level. Darn it, this was not worth the effort.
Well, the good thing is, even if you miss catching them and they quote-unquote run away, they don't really run away. You can just keep trying again.
Yeah, it's just that I don't have infinite Pokeballs. I'm working on trying to level up my freaking characters, because I haven't been catching very many Pokemon. I'll catch like one of a thing and then move on. And now I'm at this spot where everyone I'm fighting is like 6 or 7 levels ahead of me, and it's starting to become a bit challenging. And you know, so I'm trying to find the best way to grind and level everybody up. So I've been going through and just trying to get strings, you know, like combos. I'm just catching a bunch of them in a row. That seems to be working out pretty well for me. But I keep running out of Pokeballs, and I have to go back and buy, like, 50 more.
Yeah, that's one of the things. You just have to keep at it. But it's worth it in the end, especially to fill up your Pokedex.
Yeah, and I mean, really, it's I've just been playing through it with my son, and he's he really, really likes the battles, and he's been really getting into that aspect of it. So I'm trying to keep that as fun and interesting as possible. But he was enjoying helping me, try to just get like a string of. I think we caught like 15 Psyducks in a row, and he was just having a blast. Like, look, there's another one. Let's get him. And I finally found a spot on my couch where I could reliably throw Pokeballs at them because, holy crap, using the Joy-Con to throw Pokeballs is unbelievably awful. Why can't I just use the darn Pro Controller?
Actually, fun fact, if you play it in handheld, it's a lot easier.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's the motion controls on the handheld mode are fine. I can do just fine like that. But well, when I'm sitting on the couch and playing with my son, he wants it on the TV. He doesn't want it on the little screen. So, you know, we sit there and we do it on the couch. And I did, like I said, I found a good spot. It was directly in front of the TV, and I was able to throw it accurately like 90% of the time. It's the best I'd ever done. But still, I should just be able to use the darn Pro Controller. Why can't I do that?
Gimmicks.
Gimmicks.
The only reason.
Bastards. All right, well, good times. Sounds like you play a lot more games than we do.
Sometimes I get the times, and sometimes I don't. You know, even though I'm playing a lot, that doesn't mean, like, a lot of titles, it doesn't mean I'm playing them for a lot of time, period.
Yeah,
you know, even Kingdom Hearts, I'm still, like, in the second world. Like, I'm really early in it.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Kingdom Hearts last week. It's neither Dan and I's teacup of tea. Spitting teacup of tea, as it were.
Ugh, those things make me sick.
I still want to play it.
Yeah.
Like, I still want to play it too.
I played 1 and 2, so I didn't play the 300 other games, and I'm sure I'll be lost, but it looks very pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks like a... It feels like one of those, like a touchstone cultural moment where it's like, all right, well, I kind of have to be a part of the conversation at some point.
Yeah. But, you know, the conversation's also been on Resident Evil 2, so...
And I'm yeah, I still gotta that. Do that, too.
I'm out of touch with the world right now, which is fine.
That's I'm always fine. Out of touch. All this is fine. Yeah.
So, Dan, what have you been up to?
Oh, not too much. It's just been busy, at a lot of schoolwork over the past week. Because, you know, trying to become a psychologist is... there's a lot of reading involved. I don't know if anybody realized that.
Sounds like a you problem.
It really is a me problem, but I've just been kind of knee-deep in writing papers and that sort of stuff. But I did manage to squeeze some time in. We've still been playing the VR pretty consistently with the kids, which is just a blast. You know, like even just the little playroom games, like we just... You know, we'll sit down as a family and switch off controllers or do the different things with it, and that's still super fun. We managed to play through a bit more of Smash, you know, just trying to go through and unlock characters. And, like, I am still just fucking horrible at that game. I'm not good at it at all. I can't not play a fighting game when I... play it, and that is my problem. You know what I mean? Like, I keep trying, like, oh, I'm going to throw a Hadouken. I got Ryu. No, it's not how that works, but I keep trying anyway.
Actually, you can do the Hadouken with Ryu and Ken.
Yeah, when you do the actual inputs, the moves are more powerful that way.
Yep. See? I don't know this shit.
That's what you have me for.
It's just so goddamn chaotic. I still don't think I like it, but it is fun, like, my one daughter went for a sleepover because our other daughter was not feeling all that great. So me, Tiff, and Katie sat here and played Smash on the TV, you know, and that was super fun. Like, I did enjoy that. I do kind of hate that you have to go through and unlock all the characters because with none of us having free time, we don't have all of them unlocked, and that's... Mm-hmm. Super frustrating, and I don't love that. And I tried playing the story mode in that, and man, it's as convoluted and I think as terrible as the Dragon Ball one, but so much darker.
I disagree there. I found it so much better than Dragon Ball 1.
Yeah, I find it to be so much more fun just because every time you get to something, like, okay, so I'm fighting a spirit of this rando character from some really obscure game. Oh, I see how they tied it into there. Their matches are also freaking clever. Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but like some of them have just cracked me up. Like,
sure.
You know, the Guts Man one, and Mega Man's the colors of Guts Man, and he just exclusively throws you and stuff like that. Little bits like that, I find very entertaining.
Some of that is cool. I just, you know, again, with not having a ton of free time, it's just that sort of stuff is like, well, I'll never finish this. You know what I mean? Like,
well, there is a cheat to, like, unlock all the characters a lot faster.
Is that still available? I feel like I remembered hearing that it got patched out, but
I think it's like you quit the game and come back and you like play a match and you get another character or something like that. I didn't use it, but I know it's like every 10 minutes you get challenged by a character.
Yeah.
So and that also works for when you're in the story mode.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
So play the story mode for 10 minutes, back out, get a character. Play the story mode for 10 minutes, get back out, get a character.
Yeah. I've also been... There's been a ton of stuff to do in Puzzle & Dragons, so that has been a large focus as well. Plus, they just announced that there will be a Street Fighter V collab, and that is about the most exciting thing. Because that, you know, we were talking, Chris, a couple weeks ago of, like, how has there not been this collab or that thing? How has there not been Street Fighter as a collab?
Is this the first Street Fighter collab they've had?
Yes. They had Dragon Ball Z, which was Japan only, a long time ago. That hasn't come back in Japan. It never made it to North America. They had a King of Fighters collab that made it to both Japan and North America, which was really cool. But then as far as, like, Capcom, them working with them, they've done Monster Hunter, which was huge and super successful and had really great characters. And they also had a Phoenix Wright collab that I think was Japan only. I don't remember if that came to North America or not. It wasn't a huge deal. Like, there wasn't anything super strong in it that anybody needed to have. But yeah, they, like, Street Fighter, which seems like a natural match. You're matching colors to characters and whatnot. It's never happened before. And
that's crazy.
This is, like, it's coming. I'm super excited about it. I don't care how strong the cards are. I will be spending money on it so I can have them. But, like, they're doing really cool things with it of, you know, this month alone, if you were to just log in the month of February, you would walk away, clearing no content whatsoever, you would walk away with 28 magic stones and 28 pulls from a special Godfest machine, because you get one every day. And, like, that's pretty goddamn generous for a pay-to-win, at times, mobile game, you know, so... I don't know, it's been pretty cool. There's a lot going on. So, you know, but other than that, I'm just trying to be smart and stiff.
Well, you are.
I is smart. SMRT.
You is smart.
Yeah, you're willing to spend $240 in pudding, so clearly you're smart.
He's got the brains where it counts.
I have my priorities in order.
Darn right. Well, let's see. I believe I'm finally coming up on the end of Monster Boy. I just don't know. This game keeps on going. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's starting to poke me in the direction of outstaying its welcome just a tad.
Okay.
Because I've definitely gotten to a few monotonous bits. I'm in this mansion right now, and there's just, like, a lot of almost Zelda-style reflecting puzzles going on. And, I keep running into these little things that I would think, you know, other developers would have ironed out. Like, for example, there'll be a lot of these rooms are vertical. So, like, you know, there'll be a room on top of another room and there'll be, like, a little loading time between them.
Sure.
But it doesn't do anything to properly place you when you go up to the next screen. So, like, whatever your gravity is, whatever your motion is when you're going up, it continues that motion. And if that motion just happens to be, like, you're heading to the left, like, 3 pixels, it'll load the entire area bring it up, you'll be there for a split second, then you'll fall right back down, load, and then land you back down on the bottom.
It's, that's, you know, frustrating.
Little tiny, yeah, little touches like that that are starting to kind of bleed through more often, I'm finding, towards what I think is the end of the end-ish of the game. But again, all in all, I am still very impressed by it. It is still a very clever game. I thought I was going to be done with this one before January was up, but I definitely am not. This is what I was doing all through the Super Bowl, was just playing Monster Boy, and occasionally looking up at commercials. But
the superb owl.
The superb owl.
Terrible game that was.
Yeah. That was snorefest.
Not for me. I was playing Monster Boy.
I mean, but just fuck Tom Brady. Like, can we say that on the show?
Do I have to?
I mean,
I don't want to.
You might want to.
No.
I don't know.
I don't think there's any amount of money in the world that would make me want to.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I disagree with that entirely. It's not even that much money. To be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a night of bliss with Tom Brady to put my kids through college. Yeah, I'd do it.
Yeah, 100%.
I wouldn't be happy about it, but I'd do it.
I would be thrilled. You kidding? That shit's expensive. All I gotta do is take one from Tom Brady. I wouldn't be the first.
Oh,
shots fired!
Oh, yeah. He's a big fan of the show. So he's,
yeah, Tom Brady, big fan of the show.
Tom Brady's listening right now. Going to be listening on Friday, driving around in his Lexus or whatever the fuck. He doesn't even have a Lexus. He's got like an Aston Martin or some shit. To be like, ah, Dan Ryan doesn't like me. I am going to retire. Do the world a fucking favor, Tom Brady. That's right. Let somebody else win a championship, you prick.
So how about that video game industry?
So I downloaded Downwell.
Yeah.
That game's cool, man.
I didn't love it.
It's not amazing. It's just it was $3 and
I
played it and I was like, yeah, I could do this from time to time.
I don't know, it was a PS4 or a PS Plus title at some point. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm never gonna do this again, but sure. Like, I get what you're going for.
Took me a minute to get the hang of it. But that's the thing, like, as a portable thing. Like, yeah. I don't want to sit and, like, I'm not going to load that up in my living room and, you know, blast it or whatever. But as a, you know, thing to play in, like, while I'm waiting for a doctor's office. Like, yeah, this is pretty neat. I liked it. It definitely got some very enthusiastic press, which did kind of surprise me. Like, oh, I played Downwell for, like, an hour. It was so good. And, no, I mean, I didn't get that. But I thought it was a nice $3 purchase. Gunman Clive's a better deal, but still.
Much.
Gunman Clive's just awesome. And I also downloaded, because it was finally on sale, I downloaded Octodad.
Oh, I love Octodad.
Yeah. A few years ago, I guess, I downloaded it on Wii U, and I was so excited to finally play it, because you and Tiff brought it up on the show, like, eons ago, and I fell in love with the entire premise of it. And so I bought it on Wii U, and John, my son, he had loved the theme song that I was playing in the car. He just thought it was awesome. So he started playing the game. He thought it was funny until, like, right after the first part, when you're doing the yard work and the lawnmower tries to suck you up.
Yeah, it gets serious.
Right at the beginning. He was terrified of the lawnmower. So he was just like, oh, no, because he doesn't like loud noises, so I had to turn it off. But now he's, like, 5 and change, so I think he'll be into it now, because it is hilarious.
It's such a wonderful little game.
It really is. And for $5, I just couldn't say no. See, that was the thing. Like, I had already bought it for whatever the heck the original price was on Wii U, so I didn't want to drop another, like, $15-$20 on it. But, you know, drop down to $5. I have all this, you know, store credit from over the holidays still on the store credit, eShop credit. So that was $5 well spent, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I don't know when I'm going to get to it, but I'm technically one step closer on my back burner games, because I finished Katamari the other day.
There you go.
Rolled up the moon. It was a good time. I love that game.
Yeah, but now it's time for Hollow Knight.
No, Hollow Knight's after. No, see, that was a back burner game. I got to finish Monster Boy, then I'm doing Bayonetta 2, then I'm doing Hollow Knight.
Son of a bitch. I might actually finish Hollow Knight by the time you start it.
Hey, you never know.
I mean, probably not.
Things have happened.
But
no, probably not. The thing that I've actually been spending the most of my time on is the whole Wii shop closing put a fire under my ass to finally catalog my digital stuff. Just because I'm afraid that Nintendo's going to start yanking all that stuff off their website as, like, available products. And that's kind of the easiest place for me to get consistent art to attach to them. So I just kind of dove into that as far as, like, all right, I got to start cataloging that stuff and adding it into my, my catalog. You know, I have a program that I keep a list of all the games I own in, and I avoided doing the digital stuff for a while because, like, well, you know, it's digital stuff. I'm at a convention. I'm not going to need to know what digital stuff I have when I'm shopping for games, but it keeps coming up of people asking, like, I'll have somebody says, I just got a Switch. What game should I get? And I'll look at my list of games. It's like, well, these are my physical ones. Half the best stuff I have is digital stuff. I should have a list of that on me. These kinds of things have come up in conversation, or where I've wanted to know, like, did I download that one? I can't remember. And then, like, well, I could go home and I could fire off the Wii U and switch over to Wii mode and then bring up the SD card menu and then wait for that to load and check and see what I got. Or I could just catalog it like I should have done years ago. I've put the nails to myself on that. And the way that I've been doing it is I just kind of wrote down a list on my phone of all the things that I had, because first I wanted to take pictures of the screen so that I could just, like, reference from my phone and just look at the screen with all the games on it.
Right.
But on the Wii menu, all the titles are never up at the same time, because they slowly transition to, like, the Super Nintendo logo and then back to the title screen. It's like, you bastard, I can't just take a picture of this. I have to take, like, three pictures to get all the titles on it. So I eventually just made a list, and I used a little list program on my phone, and it tells you how many list items there were. I had 130 Virtual Console games on my Wii.
That's a lot.
I'm sorry.
You have a problem, sir.
I had a problem. There's no Wii Virtual Console anymore.
They're all gone now.
They are. Remember a long, long time ago, I don't even know if we were doing the show back then, when the my Wii U, when I did the transfer from my Wii to my Wii U, it corrupted. So I sent it to Nintendo, and then they just wiped the whole thing and gave it back to me. And they're like, so we just wiped that out, and we credited your account back the money that you spent on all your Virtual Console stuff. And it was like $1,200. It's like absolute insanity.
That is insane.
But it also pissed me off, because it's like, well, I really wish you hadn't done that, because I can't get SimCity back. I can't get, at the time, the Donkey Kong Country games weren't available. And I think there was like one or two others that I never got back because they weren't on the shop anymore. I'm still pissed that I didn't have can't get the SimCity back, but whatever.
It is a scary precedent, though, of like, well, that stuff's gone.
Yeah, I'm really glad I downloaded what I did before it closed. I am kind of bummed I didn't get around to downloading Gradius Rebirth, but I did get Contra and Castlevania, so that's something. But yeah, that stuff's just poofed. Somebody's got to start putting that places. Digital. Yeah, it's like I have a love-hate relationship with it. You know, at the time, I love the convenience of digital, but going back to it, if my Doc Lewis's Punch-Out is gone forever, if my Wii decides to shit the bed, and that would really bum me out, because that thing's awesome.
Well, and like...
off with Master Hand, on the other hand.
Yeah, well...
It's fun for 5 minutes, yeah. But is what it is. So I'm cataloging this stuff. It's what it all boils down to before we could dive into a whole physical versus digital conversation. That's not what we're here for tonight. But I do... I get a strange, sick joy out of cataloging my stuff. And it's been fun.
You're not alone.
Yeah, I know I'm not alone. I love having conversations with other lunatics like myself.
That's what I was doing before this podcast. I was finishing cataloging my games that I got in the mail.
I have so many categories I still need to, like, really properly go through, because this has been such an ongoing project for me for my whole life. And a lot of my categories aren't 100% accurate, because, you know, a lot of my stuff's been in storage for so long, or I've gotten collections since then that I haven't been able to add on. And since everything is all in boxes, it's harder to tell, like, oh, did I catalog this one or didn't I? Or I'll change my method of doing things, or what kind of, fields I'll use to fill out for each individual platform.
I have an easy solution for that, Chris.
What's that?
You just give me those boxes and you don't have to worry about it.
You're hilarious. From my cold, dead hands, Barry. From my cold, dead hands. Yeah, but it's every single time I have to get something out of my friend. My friend Paul was here recently, and he's doing he directs plays and stuff over at Drexel, and they're doing something that's set in the mid-90s, so he wanted to borrow a Super Nintendo and a handful of cartridges just to put in scenery. So I was like looking for a couple of things, and I wanted to get a copy of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out out, because his son really loves Punch-Out, and he's never played the NES original, so I wanted to pull it out for him. And I was like three boxes deep getting my boxed NES games. I'm like, ugh, these are so heavy. I hate my life. Every single time something like that comes up, like, I wanted to, I got that Saturn, the Knights, Christmas Knights, like a long box thing that I ordered. And I got that in. I was like, all right, cool. Let me put it with my Saturn games. Oh my God, those are like way in there. I had to like pull out all these boxes and get in there. And one of these days I'll have shelves.
Yeah, that's the secret. Just to build shelving. I was the same way. I hated it. I said boxes upon boxes of uncatalogued games or cataloged but not in order.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, and as I, when I put my shelves up, I would open the box. I'd be like, I totally forgot I had this game. Like, oh my God. And then, of course, it's like, wait, I have two of these? Why do I have two of these? Like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was the best thing I ever did, was getting shelves built and putting the games out on the shelves.
Yeah, that's it's on my list of things to do. I want to wait a little bit longer. Just because my daughter really likes pulling things off shelves and messing them up. So any physical media that she can get her hands on is, like, in danger. So
baby gate from the game room so she can't get in.
It's the basement. It's not a game room. It's a, my situation is the whole basement. It's where all the kids' toys are. So as they get older, I will slowly start to reclaim this space. But for now,
good luck.
That's funny.
That was super funny.
Well, that's the thing. The things I'm reclaiming the space for are toys that they will want to play with.
You hope.
I hope. That's true. I have little doubt that Ellie's going to like this stuff. John, maybe not so much, but there's plenty of room in the basement. Anyways, podcast for another podcast. So let's talk about the state of the union here. We're it is 2019. We want to check in where we think the big three are, where they're going, where they've been, all that other jazz, just the state of things. So we figured that since the kind of the big news, one of the big pieces of news for the last couple of days involves Microsoft and Nintendo, we'll save the two of them for after the break. So let's start with the state of PlayStation. How do we think PlayStation is doing right now? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? Where do we think their year is going to take them?
Barry, we're going to default to you. You're the guest. You get to go first.
I didn't want to step on anyone's toes.
Oh, please, step away. Are you wearing boots? Because that would be
still toe.
Okay, fair enough. It's very rude.
Honestly, right now I think Sony is in a very arrogant place. And I feel they're back in the PlayStation 2 heydays mentality, which certainly hurt their launch of the PlayStation 3. We know that they're obviously working on PlayStation 5, which is great, but they're almost pulling a Nintendo, like, yeah, we're done with the PlayStation 4 a year and a half early, which is something Nintendo's done with the 64 and the GameCube and the Wii and obviously the Wii U as well. They canceled E3, they canceled the PlayStation Experience, we have nothing to show off, all our big games have already been announced, and the whole cross-play arrogance is just, the best place to play is on PlayStation. And you know what, they have 90 million units sold, and some may say that arrogance is justified, but I think in a climate, a very social climate, I think it's the worst thing that's possible, because it breeds hostility, especially amongst fans, because the whole console wars, when it even first came out, was a marketing tool back in the second generation, third generation, and it stemmed forward. But now, when we were kids, we could only afford one system, so we championed our system. But now I'm seeing adults like, oh, PlayStation is the best, screw the others. Or like, no, you can afford them all, play them all. Like, there should be no hostility. If you're playing games, you should be playing them for fun. You should be having enjoyment out of it, and you should be able to play with your friends. And if someone else wants to play on a different console, then let them play on that console. And I feel Sony's not sending that message. Sony's like, we're the best place to play. Screw everybody else. We have the best this. We have the best that. Trust us. We're the best. And it's like, no, you're really not. You got lucky because Microsoft screwed up their launch, kind of like you did on the PlayStation 3. And Nintendo is just not competing with you. But yeah, they're just, I wouldn't say they're in a bad place because clearly the numbers don't lie, but their attitude needs an adjustment.
Yeah, they do have the they do have the fortunate situation of the Xbox One not exactly being a sales powerhouse and not exactly offering a lot that's a lot of reasons for people to play it unless they're like pixel counters. Like, oh, well, I'm going to play all of my multi-platform games only on my Xbox One X because they look the nicest on my $80,000 5K 3D HD plus alpha .com TV. And like, all right, that's kind of neat. And that's wonderful for you. But that Xbox isn't putting up the biggest fight right now. I agree. I think Sony is in a very complacent place. I think that, you know, obviously them switching up to PlayStation 5 development is, it doesn't exactly surprise me, but it's one of those things that I look at and kind of almost wonder why, just because of the, look at Sony's year last year and the year before. I mean, they're still cranking out some extraordinary games for PlayStation 4. And I mean, like, extraordinary, groundbreaking things that aren't just, you know, from a gameplay perspective, just technically speaking, these games are gorgeous. And, you know, a new system means, you know, more expensive costs, higher barriers of entry for new people and new platforms. And I just don't know that I see the real purpose of it at this point, especially when the system is still doing so well, to say, all right, well, we're done with this. Time to move on to the newer, shinier stuff. And like, I get from the perspective of like, well, I guess we want to make games for developers want to make games for whatever the hottest, most powerful thing is. Obviously that's something that developers want to do, but at the same time, is that necessarily what's best for the industry? And I don't know, but I agree that they are in a very arrogant position. And we'll talk a little bit more about Microsoft's future. They're in a weird position with Xbox One, but they've been making some pretty serious moves. So there's every possibility that, I don't think it's going to turn around the way it did with PlayStation 3. I don't think, you know, the Xbox One's going to overtake PS4 the way PS3 kind of overtook 360 during that generation. But
I don't think there's enough time for that.
Yeah, there just isn't.
Yeah.
But I do think that Microsoft has a very interesting future ahead of them. Dan, you're the PlayStation guy on this podcast. What do you think of Sony's current situation?
I don't know that I would necessarily say that they're in a place of arrogance. I do think complacency is probably a fair assessment to a point. But even with that being said, I think they are still in a very healthy place. I don't think they are in danger of losing their kind of stranglehold on the market anytime soon, considering the games that are coming out this year, plus, you know, stuff that there is still going to be stuff that we don't know about, you know, that will get announced. Yes, they are like, they're out of E3, but so is everybody else. You know, E3 is kind of unfortunately going back to being an afterthought like it was a few years ago, you know, when everybody started skipping it and it was just like, I mean, yeah, you know, I like the way Nintendo does their game announcements now. Like, I like the tree houses and stuff. Like, they don't, because you don't have to go drop a metric fuck ton of money on a bunch of stuff. Like, and sets and props and all of this stuff. Like, just put out a video. It's cool. Like, we'll all check it out.
That's not entirely... Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I do really like Nintendo's approach. I do somewhat miss the live approach, too, but I feel like Sony just went way too far in the other direction. Like, it doesn't need to be... it doesn't need to be something completely dry, but it also doesn't need to be the level of spectacle that they went for last year.
Last year was terrible.
Last year was absurd. And, like, all right, so, and even something like I really liked Microsoft's show last year. Microsoft show was, you know, they didn't really do a whole crazy lot of pomp and circumstance, and they're just like, here's a bunch of game trailers, and we're playing them live in this setting because you have that live audience, you have that energy that comes with it. If you do it without going too far in that direction, I think it's very effective. You know, you think back to all the best moments of E3, like that Twilight Princess trailer wouldn't have been nearly as cool if it was just an internet video. Like, it still would have been amazing, but seeing that live reaction feeds into it, and
it does.
I do kind of miss that about the E3 presentations. I do think it is strange that Sony's not just, you know, not going to E3 and just doing something that wasn't the crazy shit show of last year. Like, why not just go and show off the games that are coming this year? I know you already showed them off 5 years ago because for some reason that's what you do. But people are still excited to see that stuff. And as long as you temper expectations, I think it can be done well.
I do agree. They do have some really great stuff that I am looking forward to this year, you know, just kind of personally. Last of Us 2 is going to be, by all measures, is going to be a phenomenal game. There's almost no way that game is bad. And it's going to...
Ghost of Tsushima.
Ghost of Tsushima is coming. Death Stranding, whatever the hell that turns out to be, it's at least going to be fascinating. Days Gone will be here relatively soon, which is great. The stuff that's been going on with Dreams, I think is very cool. And I don't know how much you guys have seen about it, but like some of the videos that were being put up of stuff people were making within that world.
I didn't even know it was released.
There was a beta for it.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of really, really cool stuff happening. I still think they have some really cool stuff coming with VR, you know, and I'm excited to see kind of where that is going in the future. I kind of hate where we're getting to just kind of as a whole, and this isn't necessarily just a Sony thing, but like, here's the next Battle Royale thing. It's like, I mean, you know, cool, I guess, but like it worries me kind of. The only negative I see kind of for the future of where we're going as an industry for right now is this kind of just full throttled support behind this very niche gameplay thing that does not have the staying power that I think we would expect it to or want it to. You know, of like a new genre of game that is going to take over the world. But I mean, we'll see, you know, we'll kind of see where that goes, but I do think they're in a very good place, a very healthy place. They just can't be dicks about it.
Hmm.
Well, that's one of the things is that they have been dicks about it on their social media, but
yeah,
I think what you're saying is true. Sony is very good at letting third parties do more of the work than they do.
Right.
Polar opposite of Nintendo. And I think what they're doing is they're pushing all first-party stuff to the PlayStation 5 to make sure that has a good launch, and leaving the PlayStation 4 out to the third parties to do what they want to do, which is the exact same strategy they did with the PlayStation 2 and also the PlayStation 3 to a lesser extent.
Right.
The PlayStation 2... had two things going for it that made it as successful as it was in the 145 or whatever million units sold, and that was the PlayStation Portable and the Nintendo Wii. Because of those two systems, they were able to extend the PlayStation 2's life by just porting those games over onto the PS2, and that was just money in Sony's pocket. They didn't have to do anything. And I don't know if they're expecting the same thing now, but the Vita's dead. They killed the Vita. They just left it out to dry.
Right.
The Switch, you know, maybe someone will say we're going to do a Switch/PS4 title. That could be, but I wouldn't hold my breath on it. And if they play this wrong, they could very well pull a Sega, where people are going to be like, I just got this new PS4, and what, now this PS5 came out? What the heck? Why do I have to buy another one already? The PS4 has all these great games on it. Why do I need a PS5? And if they say the PS5 is out and they price it too high, the enthusiasts will get it, the diehards will get it, but even Nintendo showed that the diehards are not enough to keep a system alive. You need a broader approach. So it's tough to say what exactly is going to happen, but I think their lack of presence at E3, like, I understand PSX. They didn't want to do a whole show, have people fly out there for just showing off the same games they showed off 5 years ago, because they like to show off games way in advance. But E3, people are already going to be there. You already have an audience.
Right.
They're coming regardless. Utilize that. Use that to just say, you know what? Here's what's coming to the PS4. Let us just remind you. Even if they go out there and people say, oh, they lost E3, that's fine. They don't have to put on a grandiose show. They just have to be there in presence and say, hey, the future is going to be on PlayStation. Here's what's coming that we still have lined up. Here's some great third-party stuff coming, and here's some new VR stuff coming. You know, show that. Utilize that. And then, at the end, they could do a little tease of the future is coming, with a little 5 appear and then disappear. And like, that's it. Like, just a little teaser drop. They could build up so much hype on a show they don't even need to advertise.
You're not wrong.
I would somewhat push back a little bit on that, just it, from the aspect of, I think it is more important, and maybe I'm wrong, but I do think it is more important to lose, quote-unquote, E3 than to not be there.
Agreed. That's, you what know, I'm so saying. Like, it doesn't have to be the greatest show.
But like,
they don't even have to do a show. They could just be on the floor.
Well, but that's what I'm saying is that I think it would be worse for them to go and people be like, ah, Sony showed up and they only showed off old shit, versus not being there, because the intrigue that can build and the suspense, like, we as the public will hype ourselves up way more than they could if they came and showed us a bunch of shit that we already knew was coming, because we're all already hyped up for the 5.
Like, I have
we're
a,
already
I have a
excited,
counter argument.
You know
that.
What I mean?
I have a counter example against mm-hmm. that. All right. Was it 2016? I think it was. Yeah, it was E3 2016. Nintendo showed up, and they brought two games: Pokemon Sun and Moon, which was only shown at the Treehouse, and Breath of the Wild. That was it. That's all they brought. A game we knew about, a second game we knew about. That's all they did, and that was game of the show. That was enough to pull in people. So all they have to do is, you're talking about Last of Us 2, how it's going to be a great game. Mm-hmm. Well, come there, build a little atmospheric thing, kind of like how they had the church from last year. Build a little thing like that. Put demos out there. Let people play it. Let the games speak for themselves. They don't have to do a show. They just have to be on the show floor and let the games speak for themselves. Let the populace play these games. Let them play their first-party titles. And you know what? Go to certain third parties and say, would you like to have your game in the Sony booth? Oh, yeah. They're advertise your third parties that way. I mean, they have the show floor. They have a spot that they've had for years. They could easily just say, we're just going to utilize this as extra advertising. It's just good publicity.
It also certainly doesn't hurt to show those games again. Like, granted, you could say that even if they bring just those games, they bring the stuff that they have on the docket for this year is extraordinary. Like, it looks amazing. Say they just bring that stuff and they don't bring any surprises along with them. Even if people say that they lost E3, they're not going to say that they lost E3 the way that they said, like, Nintendo lost E3 with Wii Music. Like, it's not going to be like that. Like, well, I mean, sure, they didn't do as, you know, it didn't have a fun show like Nintendo and Microsoft, but boy, did you see the games they brought? They were freaking great. And I think that's where it kind of boggles my mind that they're like, nah, we don't need to do that. But you kind of should, because not doing that is giving Nintendo, and particularly Microsoft, a platform to show that they could possibly that could possibly counter the PlayStation 4. And to the other argument about it being, you know, like, we are the gaming enthusiasts. We're the ones that are, you know, yeah, we already know about this stuff. We're hyped up, so it doesn't necessarily matter if they're at E3. But the press and, you know, the populace in general, not everyone who, not all the millions of people who have PS4s are the gaming enthusiasts. And when that stuff, you know, E3 happens, other news outlets, you know, people that don't follow all the video game news, everyone that kind of bleeds into the rest of the general public's eye. And it's just a great refresher course of like, hey, here's these other games that coming out for your PlayStation 4 that you should be stoked about.
Exactly. Say somebody doesn't have the time to read IGN or read, you know, GameSpot or Game Informer or whatever choice they use, you know, and they pick up the newspaper in the morning and there's a thing, USA Today and the technology has this whole page on the future of PlayStation 4, and it shows Last of Us and it shows Ghost of Tsushima and it shows Death Stranding, and like look at these games, and they're talking about it, and the journalist is enthused by it from the... You know, oh my God, I didn't even know these were coming out. This looks good. I'm going to show this to my wife. You know, here's what I want for my birthday or whatnot. You know, it's just good press. Unless the games are terrible, but if the games are terrible,
maybe
it's a whole
are.
New
pay
worms.
Maybe they're trash. Maybe that's why they decided against it.
I don't know.
Like, boy, The Last of Us. This is going to be the Last of Us.
I don't think... see, the other thing is that I don't necessarily think that they're not... that there's going to be nothing from Sony all year, right? Like, I don't think we're going to sit here and be like, man, there wasn't, like, one promotional item from Sony this year. I don't think we know what it's going to be yet, but I would be very, very surprised if we make it to the end of this year and we're like, man, they just had no media presence this year.
You know what? Actually, you know? I would be the opposite. I expect them to not have it outside of, like, a new trailer. But I don't really count that.
Yeah, obviously they're
going to
promote the games that they have this year, but I mean, it's no secret that Kingdom Hearts is doing much better on PlayStation than it is on Xbox. I mean, they've got a solid lineup all year, and I think they just don't think they need to put the effort into being a part of the whole industry. I think that where they are is, like, you know, like Barry said earlier, they're in that kind of PlayStation 2 just the hubris of thinking that they're untouchable. And I think the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation 2 are vastly different situations. You know, the PlayStation 2 had, you can't chalk up the PlayStation 2's install base 100% to it being PlayStation and it being an amazing games machine, because so much of that install base bought it because it was a DVD player.
Oh,
and
sure.
Then they tried that same thing with the PS3 with the Blu-ray player, and it backfired in their face.
Exactly.
Well, that,
like,
and the,
they don't
that
have...
and the $600 price tag.
Well, yeah, that didn't help.
Yeah, that hurt,
that,
too.
That was kind of
U.S.
an issue.
Dollars. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that was...
But the PlayStation 4 isn't as ubiquitous as the PlayStation 2 was, you know? Like, there isn't a PS4 under every TV. Like, it's a massive number, don't get me wrong. But it's not the same thing, because the landscape has changed so much.
Well, and it does kind of raise an interesting point of, like, because the landscape has changed so much, and because they are so far ahead of Microsoft, and Nintendo is not competition for them, do they have to do what we've always expected video game companies to do, or can they do something different? It is certainly a risk, but they are kind of dictating where things go now, and depending on how they do this, it could be a great thing for the industry. You know, to put more control in the hands of creators and, you know, displaying their things when they want to on the schedule that I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting time. It's certainly an interesting time, because we have kind of fallen back into that, you know, into that space where, unfortunately, Microsoft, and they certainly have the capability of becoming competition again, but, I mean, unless new numbers have come out that I haven't seen recently, it's not even a competition anymore.
No, not between those two.
You know what I mean? So
it's just not going to be.
You know, so Sony is kind of rewriting the script here, and hopefully they do something cool with it and take this as an opportunity to kind of move and branch into a different direction or a different promotional style, or I don't know. We'll see.
We certainly will. It is like you said, it's a very interesting time, just in the gaming landscape in general. But as a console holder, I wonder so much about what the next generation of consoles are even going to be, as you know, the industry continues to change, and you know, a lot of the companies are leaning harder on digital, and really with the just kind of the strange, at least to my eyes, unexpected level of success that the Switch has brought. I'm very interested to see what another, you know, set, you know, a box that connects to your television is going to be.
Right.
And that's just what I'm assuming the next Xbox and the next PlayStation are going to be, are just going to be these things that are more powerful. But again, kind of also going back to the point that Barry brought up before, of people like, well, I just bought this PS4, now PS5 is out. Why do I want to, you know, spend the money on a new platform? And I gotta imagine that there's gotta be some diminishing returns there as far as like the how much better it's going to be. We were just talking last week about Cameo for Xbox 360, and I remember looking at that as a launch title in 360, and then playing Ninja Gaiden on Xbox and saying, "Well, Ninja Gaiden looks better, and it's on the older platform. So what the hell?" I'm sure the PlayStation 5 is going to be an absolute monster, but is your average Joe going to be able to look at that and say, oh yeah, that looks better than God of War. I need to buy this new system because it does things that my PS4 doesn't do, just by looking at it. And you can also, you can talk about all the features till you're blue in the face, but unless your average person can look at it and say, this is different from that, besides the number 5 on the box, you're going to have kind of a problem there. And
there's never going to be a leap like there was, you know, the NES to the SNES, you know, 8 to 16-bit, big leap, 16 to 32/64, big leap. Once you hit the PlayStation 2 age, you know, GameCube and the Xbox, the only place up was HD. And once you hit that, there's never going to be leap anywhere near that. It's like if there's going to be a new format of movie viewer, like, you know, there is like the HD 4K. Mm-hmm. It's not that much better. And if there's something past that, it's not going to be like the VCR or the VHS was to DVD. It'll never be that jump again.
It's never going to be that kind of jump. But at the same token, you know, we're talking about the generations from 360 and beyond. If you put Breath of the Wild next to Horizon Zero Dawn, there's a noticeable difference in visual quality there. Like, Breath of the Wild is gorgeous, but if you put it directly next to gameplay footage of a PS4 Pro running Horizon, you can see that that is a more powerful system. That's very pretty. Like, you can see that difference. That is a noticeable thing.
Well, that's different art styles, too, so it's not really fair to...
It is, but at the same time, you can just look at it like, look at how much grass is moving. Look at all these different things that are going on. Look how much more populated an individual space can be. You can, you can look at something like Doom, for example. That's like the crazy masterworks at Panic Button have done some ridiculous things. But, you know, even something like Wolfenstein, you put the two of them right, you play one on its own, and you're like, this game looks great. But if you put it directly next to another one, you can start to see where the leap is.
If you go to a store and you say, I want to buy a new TV, and you see 100 TVs on the wall and they're all running the same thing, you can see, all right, this one has a little bit more red, this one has a little more blue, this one's a little sharper picture, a little less pixelated. You can see those minute things, and you can be blue to the face by the time you pick one. But in the end of the day, you're only going to have one in your living room that you're watching at one time. And even if it's a slightly little more pixelated or a little bit more hue of red hue on it, you're not going to notice that because it's that isolated situation.
Well, I'm just talking about from a sales perspective. I'm talking about somebody who's trying to sell you on a PlayStation 5. They've got to be able to put it next to something so that somebody can see it in a store and say, that is noticeably different from this. You know, that's how that's going to be able to sell. And I don't know what Sony is going to be able to put on a PlayStation 5 that can be run next to a PlayStation 4, because that's what's going to happen. You know, IGN and everyone else is going to make those direct comparison videos. They always do. And that's what's going to be all over the place. I can't see how that's going to pan out for them.
I doubt a PlayStation 5 will be more powerful than a high-rig PC that you could play today. I can't see it being more technologically advanced than a high-rig PC today. I just can't.
It's not going to be. They never have been, and they never will be. But that's, you know, that's not the comparison. We're not comparing PCs to that. That's...
No, what I'm saying is if you took a PS4 or a PS4 Pro and you put it against a high, you know, res, fully loaded PC, how big of a jump is that? If you don't look at it, it's not a big jump, then the PS5 isn't going to be that big of a jump either, unless they pull something unheard of. You know, but I can't see them doing that.
I can't either, and that's exactly the point that I'm trying to make.
Yeah, that is all very true, but the thing that you put next to that is God of War 2. And then even if your graphics are not that huge of a jump, God of War 2 and Spider-Man 2 sell your system, and all of that kind of becomes, you know, because if you want to play this game, here's where you have to play it.
Well, that's the way it always,
you know,
is.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, this will sell itself the way that it's always sold itself. You know, we are way past, and have been for a long time, the graphics selling systems. Like, they are, I think, anyway, more of a, like, huh, that looks really nice, but so does fucking everything. You know what I mean? Like, that's not impressive anymore. So we're... And what's kind of great about that is that we're back to, you know, we're back to a point where the games are what is selling the system, which is why I think, you know, because you've said it before, Chris, and I've said it before, too, I think, on this show, maybe, of, like, I am surprised that the Switch is doing as well as it is. But I'm really not anymore. And the reason that I'm not is because... Now that the Switch looks almost as good as everything else, like there's not the noticeable difference, you know, unless, like you said, you put Horizon and Breath of the Wild next to each other. Yes, there is a noticeable difference. Art styles, whatever. There is a definite graphical difference between those two things. But the Switch still looks really fucking good. You know, you're not looking at that going, oh, this is shit. So... Now that we're past the, like, the graphical dick-wagging, it's back to being games. And Nintendo's really good at making games. So the Switch is selling very well. And I think it's that simple. You know?
So right. I guess that kind of comes back to the point, then what's the point of a PS5?
Yeah. If they could do God of War 2 on the PS4 and just keep that momentum going... Why even do a PS5?
Well,
it's going to be a hell of a lot cheaper for them to make.
I think you're probably
going
right.
On a platform with a humongous install base already.
I think it's a little early, but you know, I mean, I felt the same way about the Pro, and I have one. You know.
But see, stuff like that, I don't necessarily mind. Like, all right, let's do a little slight beef up to this thing. Let's do some sort of revision. And that stuff's neat. I don't love it, but I feel like that's a lot more tolerable than, say, you know, a whole new system. And I know it's like, it's just like, that's the cycle. But at this point, it just really seems, even more so than the previous generation, it just seems more like we're doing this to do it, because... The technology exists, so why not do it? Like,
the only reason I can see them doing a more powerful with the PS5 is for VR. Is to say, we want to take PSVR up a notch to put it on the same exact level as Vive and the you know, Oculus and stuff like that.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Like, one of the biggest selling points for the PS4 Pro, and the only reason I bought a Pro, is for better VR. So, if in that regards, I can totally see. And if they make it backwards compatible, great. But if you look statistically at system sales, a console maker makes less money per system sold than on software. Sometimes they even lose money. So if you were to say, oh, here's God of War 2, that's going to sell PS5s, and they put out God of War 2, and it sells, you know, 5, 6, 7 million, and it sells 5, 6, 7 million PS5s, that's fantastic. But if you put it on the PS4, and it sells 12 million, 13 million, oh, well, wait a minute, I made more money, or Sony made more money selling 12, 13 million on PS4 than 7 million on PS5, because you have to have people buy a PS5 now. And that's where it becomes a profit deal. They're, in the end of the day, they're a business. They want to make money. Yeah. They don't want to lose money. So there has to be enough, and VR might be it. That might be the very reason they're doing it. But it has to be enough to justify making money and hopefully not alienating their previous install base. And we know a lot of people don't want to upgrade, like the general populace. It's like a slow burn, and the diehards will go first. But if you don't put out anything, like say you stop cold turkey on PS4, like they did the Vita, and like, all right, now it's just going to be third party. That's it. Third party is going to keep the PS4 alive, whatever they do. That's great for a time being, but eventually those third parties are going to tater off, and the people who have a PS4 might say, well, no, I'm not going to get another big box. I'm not doing VR. It makes me sick. I can live without God of War. I want something new, and I think that's one of the reasons the Switch took off, besides the great games, is it was something new. It was something fresh, and I think that's what this industry needs, not another high-definition box putting out 18 shades of gray instead of 5 shades of gray. We need something that brings something fresh and new to the table. And like you said, Dan, about the games. The games need to be there.
Yeah, they do. And you know what? Sony might have something fresh. Maybe they do have some sort of fresh idea. Maybe the PlayStation 5 is a Switch, but with a PlayStation 4. That wouldn't surprise me either, because Sony does like to follow in Nintendo's footsteps with a shinier, blacker consoles. But, yeah.
That's true.
But I don't know. I guess we'll see. But I think that's a good place to kind of stop it with the PlayStation talk right now. We're going to take ourselves a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the other big two, Microsoft and Nintendo. You are listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geek8.com. Stick around.
And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
First up, Geekade's got a new podcast, and we're told it's very transformative. Sean?
I'm so clever.
You really are. I mean, jokes? You got them. Sean, Thomas, and Sammy are Transformers fans, and they want to share that love with you. Yes, you. The listener.
Aww.
For their very first episode, they will be discussing the first episode of the original Transformers cartoon, a show which Thomas has never seen before.
Dun dun dun.
Intrigue. Witness a mix of old and new experiences, opinions, and reviews on the first exciting episode of SparkCast. New episodes air the first 3 Tuesdays of the month, every month, right here at Geekade.com.
I feel like there was a better way to write that last sentence, but it just wasn't coming to me.
Well, I mean, thankfully you don't, like, edit writing for a living. Couldn't.
Hi, I'm a professional editor.
I mean, you know, whatever. Not for nothing, I'm really excited that we have a Transformers podcast. That's super cool.
Yeah, I think it's quite nice. Well, they seem like nice folks, and I'm happy to have them on board.
Yeah, right on.
Next, how do you follow up the Waveback Awards? By focusing on the music of one of the most beloved video games of all time, of course. We did a Bubsy episode.
I mean, just talk about going from strength to strength.
Right. Just to be fair, I do love the original Bubsy soundtrack, but no, time is the right word, because this Super NES classic is all about time, friendship, adventure, and a very honorable frog. I am, of course, talking about Chrono Trigger, and if you've never played it before, its soundtrack is legendary for a reason. Be sure to check out Waveback, Episode 73, Chrono Trigger, Part 1.
Finally, Chris. Ernie Rockelman, you know him, he's Geekade's resident film aficionado. He specializes in horror, but he's a lover of all kinds of movies, and he's taken the time to rank his favorites of 2018. From mainstream blockbusters to indie darlings to foreign hits in the making. Did you hear that? My used to live in the South came out there. Into Darlings. Ernie has a lot to say about the movies that entertained us and passed us by in 2018. Don't miss Geek 8 Top 10 Favorite Films of 2018.
I don't know if it was just me being out of touch, but this article, I hadn't even heard of. Many of these are some of the best movies of the year. Really?
Really? Why are all 10 of them Venom? It's weird.
Ouch. You can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, Venom, and more right now at geekade.com. And we are back. I can't believe I didn't mention this earlier, and I just wanted to say that in addition to the big three, there is a big fourth, and that is the state of Bubsy.
Mm.
There is a...
State of Bubsy is strong.
State of Bubsy is strong.
He's also orange. I like him.
That's actually a thing on on Twitter. There's a state of the Bubsy or whatever it was today, because they announced their Kickstarter today. There's a Kickstarter for DLC for this new Bubsy game that's coming out.
Well,
I am shocked and amazed at this entire situation here.
Are you going to be backing it?
Well, I don't think so.
Yep.
I'm going to get the game. One of the things that wasn't listed in the backer things is the, a physical version for Switch. I have every Bubsy game in physical form. I have, you know, Bubsy 1 on Super Nintendo and Genesis, Bubsy 2 on Super Nintendo, Genesis, and Game Boy. I have Bubsy for Jaguar, Bubsy 3D, and I bought Bubsy for PlayStation 4. I have all the physical flavors of Bubsy that are out there. I know there's the twofer, but that's, in, you know, package of the first two Bubsy games, and it's on Steam, so doesn't count as far as I'm concerned. I have all the flavors of console Bubsy that are available to me. Now, they're making a physical PS4 version, which I'm sure I'll get, but it's also coming out on Switch, but so far they've only announced a digital one. I just don't know how I want to play this yet, because
I'm going to be backing it for the PS4 physical, just because I need to get it physically, and I'm not sure if it's going to go to stores.
That's kind of where
you
I'm
need
at.
Both, Chris.
Well, that's the thing. If they come out with a physical Switch version, I'm going to need to get that, but like, I'm going to play this game, I'm probably going to want to play it on the Switch, rather than, you know, just playing it on the PlayStation 4, because this one I actually really want to play, because it's choice provisions. They're basically making a runner game with a Bubsy skin on it. So I want to play that. I don't know. That's the state of Bubsy. It's freaking weird. Oh, also, did you catch that, like, the first version of the little trailer they put out had an M rating on the box?
Yes.
That was weird. They've since changed it to an E rating, but I was kind of hoping that Bubsy was going the Conker route. That would have been pretty funny.
Bubsy meets
been
Conker.
Something.
That would have been. Yeah. I don't know what they're. I don't know what the hell they're doing with this. This is so freaking weird that they're diving deep into like the Bubsy, the TV
mythos.
Pilot, and like, yeah, we're pulling out these characters that only showed up in the Bubsy TV pilot. Like, wow, they're really. They're making this game, and good on them, I guess. So weird. Anyway.
I mean, if you're going to do it.
Exactly. If you're going to do it, don't do what the previous group did, because Bubsy and the Woolly Strike Back was a bland, bland ball of blandness. So bland.
Game of the
Blandy
year.
Blandy McBlanderson. Game of the year. Absolutely.
Definitely the Bubsy game of the year. But
game of the decade. Game of this weird. Generation, perhaps. God of War? No. Breath of the Wild? Let me introduce you to a little masterpiece called The Woolly Strike Back.
Exquisite.
After all, what could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
More like a bridge too short. Oh, boy. Amount of Bubsy I've played over my years. All right, let's get back to work here. We've got two left to talk about. What do we want to cover first, Microsoft or Nintendo? I leave it to you guys. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, Nintendo is probably the more interesting of the two, but Microsoft's doing some, also, you know, making some waves.
All right, let's start with the green guys then. Let's go Xbox. As we mentioned before, the Xbox One, not exactly a, not a barn burner. It's reminding me of like the GameCube to an extent. Not in the way that it has a bunch of really cool, unique games that will be classics 10 years from now, but more in the way that the people who do have it seem to like it pretty darn well. It's got its fans, and they're very happy with it. What's interesting, I think, about the state of Xbox is all the moves that they've been making, because they haven't had much output as far as like first-party original stuff, really this generation. There just hasn't been a ton of, like, and these are the must-buy games. These are the reasons that you buy an Xbox. There's been a couple of hits, but they still haven't convinced me to buy the system. It doesn't take a lot to convince me that I need to have a game system.
No, you're pretty easily swayed.
I really am. Now, granted, whether or not I could actually afford to buy one is a different animal, but, you know, PlayStation 4 sold me pretty quick.
But the thought hasn't even crossed your mind.
It hasn't been like, boy, I really should get myself an Xbox One, other than, like, yeah, I'd really like to play Cuphead, and maybe put like...
But I could do that on the PC.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to, because that's just my life, but...
But you could.
I could, and that's kind of where I've landed on the Xbox One. However, as they announced it, it was at E3 last year, and they've continued to do so since, Microsoft is buying a lot of studios. They're throwing a lot of money at a lot of talent, and making them exclusive, which is a very interesting move, because you and me both thought before E3 that Microsoft was heading on its way out the door of this whole console business.
Yeah.
And instead they decided to just double down and say, all right, these are the problems that we have. How do we fix them? And they're right now, it's looking to me like their future is kind of very much in flux, but if they have all this talent and they use it properly, they could be in a really good position come the next round of consoles. And then you've also got the other interesting news that they seem to be planning to expand their Xbox Live service to other things, including the Switch, which I still don't know exactly what that means.
Yeah, I am fascinated by that.
Barry, do you have any insight on that? Because I did try to do a little bit of research before we jumped on the show tonight, but I couldn't find any stories that I could get to that detailed more of it.
It's all speculation at this point, what it means. From what I gather, is Microsoft is trying to position themselves in a sense kind of like a Netflix, where it's like, oh, I want digital distribution, like the service to go to watch something. Netflix is like usually the first choice you come to. And I think they're trying to get ahead of the game and say, you know what, we think in the future, you know, playing online games is going to be a service. And we want to be that service, because Xbox Live is the best of the three. And if they get that service on phones, if they get that service on the Switch, and it's like, hey, you know what, play your Switch game and get Xbox Live achievements. If it's multi-platform and you don't get it on Xbox and you get it on the Switch, then you could still earn those achievements. Or, hey, there's a mobile game coming out. I mean, they did actually do that with Windows phones, where you can get achievements, and they even put one out on the iPhone. It was a Wordament. You could actually get Xbox Live achievements by playing Wordament on the iPhone. So they're not a stranger to doing this, but it's the fact that Nintendo is included in that shows that they don't look at Nintendo as a competition, but as an ally. And I think if you look at the sales numbers of the amount of Xbox One sold, the amount of PS4 sold, the amount of Switch sold in that short amount of time, they see why. There's no way they're closing the gap, and the Switch is about to overtake them. So they need to do something, and they need to do something fast. And if they throw that life, you know, preserver at Nintendo, and Nintendo decides to pick it up and drag them along, then they can kind of ride the coattails. And I think that's what it is. I think Microsoft's trying to be smart and shifting their business. And honestly, I hope that this leads to more talks with Nintendo and Microsoft. I mean, what if Microsoft says, Nintendo, look, you let us be your internet provider. You let us be the service that people play Nintendo Switch Online games through. We'll provide the servers. And in in respect, we will let you do stuff with our IPs. We'll let you have access to Rare's IPs. We'll let you do stuff with Forza if you want. And we'll maybe even put those games on the Switch as well, since they have this whole Play Anywhere idea. What if the next Forza also comes to the Switch, and you could play cross-play between Xbox One and Switch, and you earn achievements on either system? I mean, that's just great for the gaming landscape. But it also begs the question, do we really need an Xbox One at that point?
You're giving me heart palpitations here, Barry.
I'm sorry.
just the thoughts of having access to Rare's IPs again on a Nintendo platform just warms the old cockles.
It's not unprecedented for two companies to work together and trade things like that.
It's not even unprecedented for Nintendo and Microsoft. You know, we saw after the Oddworld buyout, Oddworld games come to Game Boy Color. We saw after the Rare buyout, Banjo Pilot on DS and stuff like these things. These things absolutely happened, and I mean, really, one of the coolest things, we were talking about the console wars earlier, and I think, at least in my mind, one of the things that's even cooler than a fun rivalry is when they start to work together. Like that commercial for Minecraft earlier in the year, the Survive Together ad for Switch and Xbox, was like...
That was pretty cool.
That was unbelievably heartwarming. Like... And I think back to like when the Mario and Sonic in the Olympic Winter Games, the first Mario and Sonic crossover trailer came out, and was just like, holy cow, like I know this game is not going to be great, but if this isn't one of the coolest things I've ever seen, I don't know what is. I like it when that kind of stuff happens. And I do agree, at that point, what's the point of an Xbox if they go that route? But I would argue, what's the point of an Xbox right now? It's basically a way to play PC games on your TV, because their whole thing, and Dan and I talk about this a lot, is that none of their games are exclusive anymore because everything's also on Windows. So I guess the point of the Xbox is, just how do people want to access those games if they don't want to go the PC route where they're sitting on their, at their desk with a keyboard and a mouse a few inches away from their screen, or if they want to sit on their couch with an Xbox controller and play a set-top box that works in that way. I guess that's kind of the only real reason I think there is to have an Xbox anymore, because it's essentially a PC at this point.
I would not be surprised if this is not still the heralding of the end of the Xbox.
Or at least a physical Xbox.
A physical Xbox. You know, I think this idea of where they're providing a service similar to PlayStation Now does, but with, current, up-to-date, like, the newest shit, this is just how we do this. I think that's pretty cool. Like, there's some room for that in the industry. It would certainly be a new way to kind of do things and look at gaming as a whole. I don't know. It could be very cool.
The what you mentioned about their whole online infrastructure thing too, I think is really interesting considering its timing. Nintendo Switch Online hasn't been out very long and it has not gone well. They have a decent number of subscribers, but again, the price is right. $20 a year really is extraordinarily low bar for entry. And I barely go online with my Switch. I'm paying that for the access to the NES and Famicom games, which, the February lineup is Mario 2 and Kirby's Adventure. Yay. And
some
It's Mario 2, Kirby's Adventure, and some weird sumo game on the Famicom one that I've never heard of before.
Nice.
So yay, Tecmo Sumos. I'll play it, but yeah, the whole idea of them taking, I seriously doubt that's the direction that it's going to go, but I can't help but think that there's at least a possibility, because Nintendo's got to know that Nintendo Switch Online has a very bad reputation already. People want to play flawless Smash Brothers online. Like that's just what they want and they're not getting it. It's not quite as bad as I think people say, but it's still not great. And that kind of Xbox has the infrastructure for that. Xbox Live has been the industry leader in that department, like, since day one. Xbox Live has done it right. It's been, you know, pricier than the other options, but it's also been pricier for a damn good reason. Like, Xbox Live was great. So I think it is definitely a possibility. I just don't know that Nintendo would go that route because of, you know, what kind, how insular a company they are. And, you know, also as far as sharing IPs goes, like, I feel like if Nintendo was to use any of Microsoft's IP, Microsoft would probably want that in return. And Nintendo is never going to let Mario jump on an Xbox.
No, so. They don't need to, though. See, when I mentioned the sharing IPs, like you said, Nintendo is a very, very close-knit company, and they don't like to work outside of Japan. You know, they do have some American studios, and obviously NOA and NOE, but they prefer to work with Japanese studios. So the fact that Microsoft, being American, wanting to come on and be the distributor of the internet service, of the online infrastructure for the Switch, they might be hesitant. Like, I don't know, you know, you're American, do we really want this? We'd rather work with Japanese. Xbox does not have a good reputation in Japan at all. And that's what Microsoft can do to sweeten the deal. Like, all right, we understand that. Well, what if we let you use Rare IPs? What if we said that we would distribute some of our games and put them on the Switch as well as part of the Play Anywhere, and the next Gears of War is going to go there, and we could, and they could even release back catalogs. Like, here's the Halo catalog on the Switch. We know the Switch can handle it. Here's the Forza catalog, the Gears catalog. How about stuff like Ori and the Blind Forest? I mean, that would be perfect on the Switch. God, like, put
Cuphead
things like that.
Would be perfect Cuphead on the Switch.
You know, Crackdown, the new Obsidian, you know, like, oh, we just bought Obsidian. Well, instead, Obsidian will actually make stuff exclusive to Xbox and Nintendo, and all these studios that they just purchased exclusive to Xbox and Nintendo. Like, that could be a huge boom, and it would get them way more units sold than, oh, and we want to keep our archaic, you know, Nintendo Network only kind of deal. So there, Microsoft does have bargaining chips. It all depends on how open Nintendo wants to be to these discussions.
So I thought Dan was going to say something, but instead he vaped.
I don't know. Like, I find it hard to believe that we would get to a point where Nintendo would be cool with that. Mostly because I don't, like, do the Rare properties have any life left in them?
On Nintendo, yes.
But if they're made by Nintendo, because Rare can't make games anymore.
Well, I mean, right? I don't know that they can't make games anymore. I mean, there are fans of Sea of Thieves, and they didn't make Killer Instinct, but that game did pretty well for itself. I think the thing is that it's the reason that the Rare IPs just aren't a good fit on the Xbox. They're not.
Objectively, they just have not been very good. I don't know. I still think, you know, my opinion, and what the fuck do I know, but that's why you're listening to this show, I suppose. I still think their best direction is to get out of the hardware business, because they do have some cool IPs, and if Microsoft Game Studios is a thing where they're making, you know, like, PC exclusives, like, you know, your physical copies or whatever, on PC, but also providing some sort of service like a Netflix for games, that is a very cool idea, you know, and that, I would imagine, anyway, I don't know all the technical aspects of it, but I would imagine that that would eliminate a large chunk of the barrier to entry for, you know, upgrading your system of, like, well, our servers are upgraded, and maybe we charge $2 more a month for our service, like Netflix has gone up, you know, relatively, with the increase in production value of their own shows and stream high def 4K and whatever. But I don't know, like, I don't know that I see Gears of War being a huge selling point on the Switch. I don't know that it's not.
Doom, yeah, and Wolfenstein did well.
Yeah, they did well. They didn't do gangbusters, but they did well. But I think that's kind of an interesting point, is that if you start to put more of that kind of stuff out to that kind of an audience, you start to build an audience for it. Now, again, it's...
To a point, sure.
To a point, but really it's the stuff that Microsoft has that doesn't do well on their platform that I think would do well elsewhere. It's, you know, their Rare properties. You know, I worry about this new Battletoads game just... Who's buying it? Like, it's an Xbox exclusive.
Yeah.
If that drops on the Switch, well, now we have a different conversation.
Right. You know, I would agree with that entirely. And like you said, Ori and the Blind Forest and Cuphead.
Yeah. Ori and the Blind Forest, Cuphead. If they decided to make a new Banjo game on the Switch, you want to talk about making some money. Like, I don't even like Banjo-Kazooie. I never have and I never will. But there's a definite want in the world for a third, you know, proper third Banjo-Kazooie game. And if they released it on Xbox as an exclusive, it's never going to do what it could potentially do on a Nintendo system, because that IP and most of Rare's IPs are still just so linked to Nintendo, which is crazy because it's been a couple of generations and it's still so associated with, you know, that brand is still so associated with them.
Has it been more or more years away from Nintendo than it was with Nintendo at this point? It has been, right?
Yeah.
At least with exclusivity, you know?
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Rare was making stuff on NES, but it was also, you know, making stuff on Genesis back then.
Right.
But as far as exclusivity,
it is fascinating to look at Microsoft, to see a company go from, at the start of the last console generation, of the 360 just kicking ass everywhere, you know, taking names, whatever, to losing a shit ton of momentum during that generation, to now being just, what are they doing? You know, like, within a couple of years, they went from on top to like, I mean, what do you guys got going? What are you doing? It's weird. It's a very odd thing that it turned that quickly. And I can't really pinpoint why. Just like, because we talked about this last year at this time,
I can pinpoint it.
What is it?
It was the whole DRM at the start of the Xbox One that alienated so many people, and Sony just came out and with that whole little video, here's how to share games with PlayStation 4. And they went out and they said, you know, right at E3, because they went after Microsoft, there is no online DRM with PS4. And that backlash is what hurt the Xbox One, because so many people were on board and they're like, you know what, screw you, I'm going to go over to PlayStation where I can own the game and I'm not having coasters and I don't have to have always online because I can't always be online. And even though Microsoft backpedaled, the damage was already done.
So that's Sony also dropped that their price was less than theirs too, right? At that E3.
Yeah.
So they had price, they had the no DRM thing. Like, Sony just looked infinitely cooler, and then they followed it up with the quality content. Sony had the exclusive IPs that Microsoft didn't. You know, Sony dropped all the money to get all that
all the Destiny stuff at that time.
Exactly. They threw all the money at the third parties to get exclusive DLC and things like that. I mean, that's pretty much, it was right from the get-go. Like, Sony just did everything right out of the gate. Not even everything right. They did everything that Microsoft did wrong right out of the gate. And I think that's really what happened to it. And Microsoft hasn't been able to recover because they haven't had the software to do so. You know, the end of the day, the platforms next to one another aren't entirely different. It's not like you can look at one and say, well, that's an Xbox game or that's a PlayStation game. Like, end of the day, they can both do pretty much the same thing. It just comes down to, like, well, you can play all those games on PlayStation, which is, you know, the system your friends have too, so you'll play online with them, but you can also play God of War and Horizon and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, ultimately going with the theme of the show, the state of the Xbox Union is one of continual confusion. But one that I think we would all agree that we want them to do well, because, you know, competition is always good.
Yeah.
Well, you were talking about E3 before and about how, you know, like, Sony's now not there and they're leaving the show open for Microsoft to do something big. Could you imagine Microsoft getting up there? You know, they're showing game trailers here, there, left and right. And then you have Phil Spencer up on stage and he's like, I need to introduce a very special guest coming out. Mr. Shigeru Miyamoto, and Miyamoto and Bill Trinan come out on stage on Microsoft's press conference to talk about a partnership where Microsoft's bringing these games to the Switch and doing that infrastructure. And even though it's nothing for Xbox One, it's just seeing them up on stage, kind of like the Game Awards at the beginning when you saw all three. It was like a magical moment. And could you imagine, like, the ripples that would have? Like, Sony, look, you're not here, so we're ganging up on you.
Close it out with introducing Banjo and Smash, and like the internet collectively losing its mind
with Banjo 3 as well coming exclusively to the Switch or Switch PC, like the Xbox everywhere. That's fine, but that would be amazing.
And I think, and this will be a nice dovetail into the Switch. I think that only helps Nintendo. Like, I don't think that helps the Xbox. It helps Microsoft.
It makes that brand a crap load of money.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like I said, they don't make the money on the systems. They make it on the software. And Microsoft, go on.
No, I just don't think Microsoft cares as much at this point about they need to be the best-selling console. I think at the end of the day, as long as they're making money, they're okay with being where they are.
And Microsoft gave up wanting to be the best console when they did Xbox Anywhere, and they put the same games on day one on PC, because then it became, there was no point in getting an Xbox One when you can get the same games on a PC. And they knew that. They knew it. They threw their hat in the ring at that point. They're like, yeah, we're almost bowing out. And that's if they play that strength. Because remember, PC, you know, if someone says, well, I'm going to buy a PC and get that. Well, what are you running on that PC? Windows. Guess who makes the money? Microsoft. So Microsoft has their hat in that ring too. So don't get it wrong. They're playing their strengths. But if they put out Banjo-Kazooie 3 and they put it out on PC, they put it out on Xbox One, they put it out on Switch, every unit sold of that game on Xbox One, even if it does the worst performance there, they make money. Every unit on the PC, which will probably be second, they're going to make money. And while, yes, every unit on the Switch, Nintendo's going to take a cut because it's on their system, Microsoft's getting a larger chunk because they develop and publish. So if it sells 5 million units on the Switch, they're making a crap ton of money. They don't care. They're making money. It's a business at the end of the day.
I just don't think they're as protective. You know, because we've said the same thing years and years ago. Lots of people had said, you know, you put Mario on PlayStation, Nintendo's going to make a crap load of money, but it's more valuable to them to own, you know, just they have to keep that in house because that's what they use to sell their systems, because that's just the different kind of mindset that there is with Nintendo. I just, like you said before, with the whole, you know, Play Anywhere, I just don't think Microsoft thinks like that. I think as long as they know that they're making money, and they'll continue to make some sort of hardware, continue to have the, you know, people that are just going to want that Xbox experience. They're not going to want to get a PC. They want to play console. They want to play these games, but they want to play it in a console environment. And as long as it's cost effective for them to do so, they'll continue to offer that option to people. But throw in not even all of their games. Like, they don't even need to throw Halo on Switch or anything like that. Even if they just very selectively say this property would work well with on this platform, then go for it. And because Nintendo and Microsoft have the relationship to do so, it's fine with them. Now, Microsoft and Sony, that's just not going to happen because Sony's not, they're not playing that kind of ball.
Well, when I also said Halo,
I wouldn't be shocked if Microsoft goes so far as to, like, hey, so we're just going to put games on Switch, give it a minute, and you'll play Gears of War on PlayStation. That would not surprise me at all.
That could happen, too. When I said Halo, though, I was referring to even, like, the Master Chief Collection. Like, even if they put
titles... That's what I think. If there was ever going to happen,
That would be huge.
Master Chief Collection or the original Gears on the platform, yeah, those would be pretty huge.
I don't think they're going to put on PS, though, and at least not yet, because I think it's a pride thing. I think Sony has stomped Microsoft so much this generation that it's a pride. It's like, no, we are not going with you. And especially with the way Sony's handled themselves. Like I brought back at the beginning, the arrogance. The we're not doing cross-platform play because the best place to play is on PlayStation. That is an arrogant statement.
And
meanwhile,
also, the other half of that would be, I don't think PlayStation would allow it. I don't think they'd be like, I don't want Gears of War on our system. Screw you.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing. I think the only one who is in a more definable position out of the three is Nintendo.
Agreed. Let's switch over. I didn't do that on purpose.
There you go. Let's switch over to the
state of Nintendo. But real quick, so the state of Xbox. What do we think officially? The state of Xbox. Barry, go.
They are in the middle of the ocean. They do have a life preserver around them, so they are still afloat. But if someone doesn't come and rescue them, they are going under.
Agreed. Dan, state of Xbox?
Agreed. It very much in flux, leaning towards no longer being a console maker.
I say they have a very interesting future between their partnerships with Nintendo and all the studios they've been buying. They have a very interesting future. But they need some help. All right. State of Nintendo. Nintendo is in the weirdest position, but also the most clearly definable, because Nintendo is the only one out there technically with two consoles, because the 3DS is still a thing.
Yeah.
Etrian Odyssey Nexus just came out today.
Sure did. Yep. So, state of Nintendo. Barry, what do you think?
Nintendo is in a position that they need to be careful. We've seen what they've done before. We've seen them ride high on the Wii, put out some great software, let anything come out on it, and then buckle down and screw up with the Wii U. So they say they've learned from their mistakes, and I think it's clearly shown. They need to continue that trend. And I think the biggest defining moments of the Switch actually don't come from the system itself, but from the software, with these literally shakeups from these classic IPs, these, we're going to tread new ground, we're going to go back to our roots, we're going to change things up, or switch things up, if you will. You know, Breath of the Wild definitely redefined Zelda, and Mario Odyssey, in a way, redefined Mario while sticking to the roots of 64. Metroid Prime 4 was probably going to be a very play-it-safe Metroid game, and they didn't want that. They wanted something new and fresh, and the fact that they restarted that whole game shows me so much confidence that they want in that game. Like, they really want this to be high quality. And yes, some games haven't set the world on fire, like Kirby or ARMS. They're new IPs or they're classic IPs trying to do new things. Splatoon has been awesome. Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is a phenomenal RPG, and a damn shame that you haven't touched that, and you really need to. They're going all out with the software, and I think that's where it shows. They have, if you look at the lineup this year, even taking out Metroid Prime 4 now, and we're going to take out Pikmin 4, let's just say that's not coming because we just don't know. You still have Bayonetta 3, you have Animal Crossing, you've got
Fire Emblem.
Fire Emblem is coming out. You know, you've got
Mansion.
These... What?
Luigi's Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion 3. I mean, there's just so many titles. And it's still the beginning of the year. We haven't had an official Nintendo Direct. We haven't had E3 where there's going to be some surprises. They already said that there's going to be one title this year that's going to be very close to people's hearts that we just don't know. I'm hoping it's maybe a Mother Collection with Mother 3, or maybe a new Star Tropics game or a new F-Zero game. I mean, the sky's the limit. Nintendo is sitting on the best catalog of IP in this industry, bar none. And they, if they utilize it, if they play their cards right, it doesn't matter what the other two do. They can just be their own individual self. I mean, they've sold, what, 32-point-something million in less than 2 years? They sold over double what the Wii U did in its entire lifetime in less than 2 years. Smash sold, like, what, 13 million or something in 3 weeks? Mm-hmm. Like, that's insane. Nintendo is on top in terms of momentum. And Sony is just coasting. Nintendo is building that momentum.
Yeah.
What worries me is what happens when a PS5 or an Xbox 4 comes out, provided nothing happens between Microsoft and Nintendo. And now all of a sudden, you know, the Switch can't handle these games. So now developers have to decide, are we going to do a Switch version as well as a PS5, Xbox 4, or just a PS5, Xbox 4, or just a Switch? And that worked for the Wii because of the PS2, because of the PSP. You know, as much as the PS2 lived off those two systems, the Wii did as well.
And I would even argue that the Wii didn't really live off it, limped off it at best.
Well, yeah, it did. But it's still like certain games, they decided, hey, I'm going to spend the money and make a Wii version because I can also port it to PS2. It justified the cost. Mm-hmm. And we saw with the Wii, it sold so much, but the software attach rate was terrible on the Wii. Terrible. Abysmal.
Yeah,
the Switch attach rate is great.
Because it's not just resonating with, you know, the Wii we've talked about plenty of times on here was such a strange animal because, yeah, it sold a buttload of systems, but a considerable chunk of it, nobody wanted any more games. They bought Wii Bowling. Like, they bought Wii Sports, the end. And then a chunk of those people bought, like a sizable chunk bought New Super Mario Brothers, and they bought Mario Kart, and Wii Fit, and Wii Sports Resort.
Wii Play.
And, well, yeah, Wii Play. They didn't buy Wii Play. They bought another controller that came with a disc. But that was the entire ecosystem for the majority of Wii owners. You know, at the end of the day, you had really great software that came out on the Wii, but none of it grabbed people because none of it was those weren't gamers that were playing the Wii. Dan wasn't playing the Wii, you know, because most people didn't want to do that. They wanted to play their new system on their new HDTV, and the Wii just wasn't properly compatible with HDTVs. It just wasn't. The Switch is such a different animal because it's selling Wii console numbers, but it's also resonating with gamers, and it's not just their games that are selling. The indie titles and the downloadable stuff is also selling. It's capturing a lot of the handheld market that doesn't. Like, these are games that you don't play on a mobile phone, but it is on a portable system. But then you've also got things that you can play on your big TV, like your Mario and your Zelda. It's ticking all the right boxes. What you mentioned before that concerns me with Nintendo is the lack of quality control in this last year. Kirby was all right, but it wasn't as good as Planet Robobot was, and that was a 3DS game. They didn't their reliance on Wii U ports, porting New Super Mario Brothers. Like, yay! But at the same time, that's treading really close to ground that I don't think Nintendo wants to remind people of. Like, yes, the New Super Mario Brothers games sold excruciatingly well, but it also caused that was very emblematic of what disconnected so many gamers from Nintendo's consoles at that point. And contributed so much to the failure of the Wii U is that sterile, non-creative aspect of Nintendo's games. Like, that's not something you want to harken back to with the Switch right now, I don't think. And it's one of the reasons people were angry at stuff like 1-2 Switch. Like, okay, but you did this already. We did this, and this did not catch on. Fortunately, Breath of the Wild was good enough to completely overshadow that. But there was some bad will associated with that, and the fact that they're relying so heavily on ports of Wii U games is slightly concerning to me, and the complete lack of quality control on the eShop. When this thing launched, it was so tightly regimented, like, and these are the games you're getting, and all of them are awesome. And now it's $2.99 mobile ports just flooding the eShop, and no way to get around them. And there is just the hottest of garbage all over the eShop that's burying some great stuff. I think it's a problem that they really need to deal with.
And kind of piggybacking on that, I think what makes Nintendo so easily definable for me at this point is that they are in an incredibly strong position as long as they continue to be able to churn out really high quality first party stuff, and Metroid Prime 4 being delayed, while I'm sure it is delayed for a good reason, you know, this year I'm not all that concerned, but like we had talked about it before of, you know, at what point it has Nintendo run out of things and we're just back to the Wii U of where we're relying on the retreads and whatnot. You know, will they have another system mover like Breath of the Wild next year? You know, will that be Metroid Prime 4? Probably. But is, like, once we've hit all the, like, these are finally the Nintendo games we want to play up in a modern console, once we've gotten through those, what else you got?
You know, there could be new stuff, or we could actually start seeing third parties make really good exclusive games for the Switch, because we're starting to see a lot of third parties, they've caught on, like, well, people are buying these games, so let's jump on it. And right now it's a lot of ports, but now we're starting to see closer to day and date releases. We're starting to see the multi-platform stuff. You know, there's a Switch Mortal Kombat. We got the freaking Marvel Ultimate Alliance coming on Switch. Yeah. Every time I remember that, I'm like, boy, that's weird, but...
It is weird.
But here we are. I mean, so
I think that they are in a very a dangerous position. But one that is like, it's pretty easy to see their way forward, but it could all come off the rails in a big, bad way in a hurry.
They could Nintendo the hell out of it in no time.
Yes, they could.
They could Wii Music the fuck out of
this. Oh, God, no. And,
you know,
that
because
said,
you're right, like, they're...
I want Wii Sports on my Switch. I really do. I just want to play that bowling game on the Switch.
See, I mean, because, like, that's the thing. You know, new Luigi's Mansion, great. But, like, one, you know, like I said, once you get past all that, you know, and if we're talking about a PlayStation 5 exists in the world, because then at that point, I would have to imagine you don't have the day and date ports. Because now the Wii U is two generations again behind, and you, or the Wii U, the fucking Switch is two generations behind, and you're no longer capable of doing these things. You know, or you're dealing with severely downgraded ports.
And that all depends on how long the PS4 and the Xbox One are dragged mm-hmm. along. Because if you know, there were games still made for the PS3 and 360 for years,
right.
You know, after the PS4 and the Xbox One. So
until relatively recently, I think, the last year or two. I'm sure they are still putting out FIFA for PS2.
Hey man, Just Brazil. Dance came out for the Wii this year.
Yeah, and Wii U.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, so there will always be stuff, but, you know, we're getting the heavy hitters. You know, we got Mario, we got Zelda, we're getting Pokemon, we're getting a new Pokemon. You know, we're going to get Pikmin. Splatoon is always going to be a huge deal now, as long as they don't
we got
fuck that
Smash.
Up.
We haven't even gotten a new Mario Kart. I don't even know if we're going to.
We're going to get later on. There's no reason to put a Mario Kart 9 yet.
Exactly,
yeah,
and that's
not,
the thing. They still
yet.
Have Mario Kart. They have a new Mario Kart in their fucking pocket. Like they could
right,
do that late
that,
in
they've...
the system life because they're living off of the previous Mario Kart. But I have this just real personal hope that they start getting weird again because that's one of the routes that Nintendo could go. Where like, all right, we've got the install base, we've got people buying our shit, so let's get weird. Let's bust
they
out
just
of rhythm
gave
heaven.
They gave
a
Sushi
you know?
Striker. I mean, how much more weird do you want to go?
They gave you Sushi Striker and Labo, and neither of them did well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I know what you mean, but I mean, like, the continuing of the weird. Like, let's keep that going. Yeah, Sushi Striker was weird, but it was a 3DS game. You know, Labo was weird, but it was a gamble, and they're not even done with Labo yet. It's still cooking. They're still going to release a few more things, according to them. So, we'll see where Labo goes. But I mean, like, Let's get our rhythm heavens. Let's get our art styles. Get really Nintendo weird. And
well, here's the way
just
I think
give
about
me
it.
Pro wrestling. God damn it!
That'd seriously, cool. Give us a damn pro wrestling. Pro wrestling.
You mentioned Metroid Prime 4 about sales. Historically, Metroid games have not sold well. People call it the third pillar of you know Nintendo mascots, but in truth, it just does not sell well. But the public reaction that I've seen from the delay has actually been like 95% or so positive, that Nintendo is willing to just come out and be transparent and tell us what's going on. And they want that quality control, that, you know, that seal of quality on there. They want it to meet their standards. And that is such a reassuring feeling that they are actually going to back this up, and they are going to defend, you know, making these games good again and have that seal mean something. And while they may not be able to police the entire eShop, in terms of what they can put out, a lot of people forget that Nintendo, first off, has a big list of IP that they haven't touched in a while. Wave Race 1080, F-Zero, Star Tropics, Ice Climbers, Cuckoo Land. I mean, there's just so many. Geist, Eternal Darkness. I mean, you could just go on and on and on about what they have. Golden Sun. I mean, they have so much IP, and they can pull from any of these at any time. And a lot of people forget that Nintendo's still doing new IP. I mean, some people say, oh, Pikmin and Splatoon are the last IPs. We just had ARMS, and there's Dylan's Rolling Western, and, you know, there's new IPs.
Sakurai Samurai. Pushmo. I want a Box Boy collection, damn it, because I want that Box Boy amiibo in America.
I already imported that to get that.
I missed my window. Now they're all freaking hundreds of dollars.
Oh, no. But see, here's the thing. When you look at all these other systems, outside of the very beginning of the NES, from 1989 until present day, Nintendo has always had a home console and a handheld. Sometimes two handhelds, sometimes two home consoles. But they've always had their hands in both jars. If there is no successor to the 3DS, or their successor is a Switch Mini, which is, you know, plays all the same games, a la Turbo Express kind of deal.
Fingers crossed.
Then everything is in the same jar. So all those 3DS style or those handheld style games, Pokemon's already come over. You know, the Golden Sun, bring that over. Like, those teams that are normally making the 3DS games or whatever handheld games, now they can come over. Grezzo, for example, you know, they started out doing Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask 3D ports. Then they got their own thing with Ever Oasis, another new IP.
Oh, my God. Now they can port that to Switch.
Yeah. Bring Ever Oasis. Bring a new Ever Oasis to Switch. That's my point. There's a lot cooking that we don't know, because Nintendo is the only company that has been able to successfully carry a handheld and a console at the same time. And if they're both in the same pot, that's just a lot more games.
It is, as long as they follow through on it. You know, as long as they do the right thing.
Of course.
Because they could Nintendo it the hell up. I mean, what freaks me out is, all right, so Retro's working on Metroid Prime 4. What the hell have they been doing? What has Retro been up to for years? There's a couple of the Nintendo studios that have been so quiet for so long, and like you said, there's a ton of IPs, but that's what I'm talking about with the getting weird. Like, God, do I want a sequel to Kid Icarus Uprising? I would absolutely love to see that pop up on the Switch, because that's my favorite Nintendo IP. Like, just from a character perspective, I love Pit. I love the world of Kid Icarus. I always have. I always will. And Uprising was a great game marred by weird controls. But now is the time. Like, you were talking about Metroid Prime, or Metroid in general, never being a huge seller for Nintendo, which is true, but this is their great opportunity to make it that. They haven't had a platform since the Super Nintendo where that would realistically be a thing, where Metroid could be as big a seller as it should be. Until now, the Switch is the first platform since the Super Nintendo where Metroid actually could get the sales that it deserves.
I mean, the original one did well, I think.
Well, it did well by GameCube standards, but it, you know, it did nothing compared to the bestsellers on PlayStation 2 and Xbox, which is, you know, it is what it is. And that's why we kept getting Prime games, because Nintendo saw an opportunity. Like, all right, Prime is selling. We have this Metroid Prime brand. Let's follow it up. And obviously diminishing returns each time, because, you know, you had Prime 2 went up against Halo 2, and as great as Prime 2 was, Halo 2 was the name. And then you have Prime 3, but it was on the Wii, and nobody wanted that game on the Wii. Well, at least, no, the Wii audience didn't care about Metroid Prime.
Well, so, you know, there's going to be a trilogy release on the Switch this year, so that'll help.
They're darn well better be, but even then, it's still going to come with the stigma of being a port. which Nintendo has overplayed that card a bit. Now, granted, the ports that they've brought have been largely smart, and I love that more people have played Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, because that game underperforming on Wii U is such a heartbreaker, because that game's a goddamn masterpiece. But at the same time, they relied pretty damn heavily on that stuff this year, and as much as it is stupid that people complain about that, because, you know, that's just the internet answer to it. Like, oh, Bayonetta 2 is their only release in February for the Switch. Yo, Bayonetta 2 is just a port. Like, yeah, but 10 people played it. You didn't play it. The people who are complaining about this didn't play this game.
I played it.
I played a little bit of it on the Wii U, and I'm going to finish it on the Switch, because I finally played the first Bayonetta on the Switch. Because
honestly, people who complain about the ports, I think, aren't looking at the big picture.
They definitely are.
If you look at 2017, right? 2017 was an amazing year. Breath of the Wild, Mario Odyssey, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Splatoon 2, ARMS, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, you know, Mario and Rabbids from Ubisoft. I mean, like, it was an amazing year. But you can't expect that every year. They're humans making this game, and humans need breaks. You don't want burnout. So in a
Burnout. Put Burnout on the Switch, damn it.
That would be great. But in a lesser year, you know, some ports help fill those gaps. And when you're talking about the Wii U, you're not talking about ports from, like, Super Nintendo or N64 or even GameCube or even Wii, which were all much more successful than the Wii U. You're talking about games that did not sell well. They did not get an audience. Like you said, Tropical Freeze was criminally undersold. And the fact that it's gotten new life and it's selling well is a testament to that. So I don't mind the ports. Give these games new life. I played them on the Wii U. I loved them. But I'm in the minority, and I know that. Mm-hmm. So for all these people that these are new games, that's great. Let them fill out the year that way. Because I don't want them to burn out. I want them to play smart. And you know what? They ended the year not with ports. They ended it with Super Mario Party. They ended it with Xenoblade Chronicles 2 Torna. They ended it with Smash Brothers and Pokemon Let's Go. None of those are ports. Great titles.
And still, a large portion of the internet disagrees with you about Smash being a port, and I hope they all get hit by buses.
No, Smash is definitely not a port.
I'm going to go ahead and disagree with Mario Party being a great title.
Really? I've had a ton of fun with my friends with Mario Party. Yes, it only has 4 boards, but it is a ton of fun, and it's selling well, too. It is
definitely a good selling title. You're not going to convince us about Mario Party.
No, it is still Mario Party.
You know what? But here's the deal. After 9 and 10, it's Mario Party.
that is kind of goes to the larger point of that Nintendo is getting back to basics. Even games that are slight disappointments like Mario Party or especially Mario Tennis or even Kirby, they're these back to basics approaches. Like Mario Tennis may be a bit on the anemic side, but it is a damn sight better than that series has been in a long time.
That's a great engine too. Like that's a good game of tennis.
Exactly. Play. Like turn off all the crazy fancy rules and stuff, because that's how I played it, because I just couldn't get the hang of all the weird power smashes. I just turned off all the wacky rules and played basic tennis, and it was awesome. It's just a good game of tennis. So I want to see them continue this, you know, back to basics approach, doing what they do and doing it well and putting a major focus on quality. Whether or not they will actually do it, and whether or not they'll follow through with all these weird dream Xbox Live discussions we've been having is a different story. But I don't know. They're in a weird position because they are in the perfect spot to just spiral incredibly downwards. They need to fix that eShop. They need to get on some kind of quality control and get these crappy mobile ports off of the bestsellers, off of all that, like just off of the splash pages. Because I never want to see that stupid Astro Bears game sitting at the top of the list when great titles are not even ranking. I hate that stuff.
Well, I have a question for you, and I'm curious at your thoughts. When Nintendo announced that they were going into mobile, they stated that they were doing it for brand awareness and to generate interest in the IPs to then push that to console follow-ups. Since they've gone to mobile, we had Miitopia, Miitomo, which then got Miitopia on the 3DS. We've had Mario Run, which followed up with Mario Odyssey. We've had Fire Emblem Heroes, which has been following up with Fire Emblem Three Kingdoms. We've had Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, which now there's a new Animal Crossing. Now, we have Dragalia Lost, we have Mario Kart Tour, and we have Dr. Mario World. Do you think this will lead into Dragalia Lost getting a proper entry onto the Switch, a new Dr. Mario on the Switch, and leading into Mario Kart 9 sometime after Mario Kart Tour? Or do you think that they're going to kill that trend?
First, I have to say, in the interest of keeping you out of trouble, because there was recently a pretty nasty backlash about this on IGN, it's Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Oh, Three Houses.
Please.
What'd I say?
You said Three Kingdoms?
Oh,
and I was
three
like,
houses.
Oh no. Don't
I'm sorry.
Don't mistake a Fire Emblem title, because no. The internet will get on you for that.
I deeply apologize. It's Three Houses. My bad.
It's Fire Emblem Who Gives a Shit is the next one, I think.
All right. That's a good question. Dragalia Lost, I would like to see that happen, but something tells me it won't, because it was, you know, that whole... I feel like that game's entire purpose is to be a mobile game. It would be cool, but that one I think they might skip. A Dr. Mario on the Switch? Yes, please. I hope so. And I'd like it to be like a proper Dr. Mario. Like, I've written articles about the fact that Dr. Mario has been on a downhill slope since the N64, because they hit this really great high point with Dr. Mario 64 and have just been using that literal framework and art assets and yanking things out of it since, which makes me sad, because I love Dr. Mario with all my heart. That would be a really cool thing. Mario Kart, I think you're spot on. I think it'll be a big gap, similar to the like Animal Crossing. I think it'll be like a year or two before we see Mario Kart 9, again, because of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe still selling absurdly well. But you know, Mario Kart Tour, as long as it's not garbage, is probably going to do some pretty good money for him. I don't know that I see the correlation between Mario Run and Mario Odyssey, but...
Because they put it out on iOS and got people interested in the Mario IP that hadn't played it before, mm-hmm. or that, oh my god, I haven't had a Nintendo system in a while, they get back into Mario, and then, oh, what's the next Mario game? Mario Odyssey. Let me go buy that. Or even New Super Deluxe could be attributed to that, too.
I would say the Super Deluxe would be a closer attachment, just because I feel like 3D Mario is such a different animal from 2D Mario, which is why they went the route that they did with Mario 3D World and 3D Land, but that's kind of a deeper discussion. I think that they are going to continue to try to make that trend a thing. I don't know. I don't know how to judge the success of that. I mean, I know that Pokemon saw a big bump after Pokemon Go, even though that wasn't strictly, you know, Nintendo's doing. But you can definitely see a certain correlation with it. I think Nintendo is doing some interesting things in the mobile space. You know, obviously the pricing of Mario Run didn't work out the way that they wanted it to.
Which is a damn shame, because I like that model.
It's one of the few mobile games I still play. I'll still turn that game on from time to time, because it's a good game. It's fun to play. I don't know. That's a very good question, and I guess we will see. So we do need to wrap this up. This has been going on for quite some time. So final words. State of Nintendo, Barry.
They're like Dan said, they're in a very unique position. I think they have the most to lose outside of Sony. Sony has the most to lose. I think Nintendo also has the most to gain if they play their cards right. They're definitely not in the same boat as Microsoft by any means. They're on a cruise liner, and they are cruising towards Microsoft. Whether they rescue them or not, that's another story. Whether or not they run out of coal all depends on... I'm not even going to say this year. I'm going to say 2020. And what Sony does will directly affect how their coal supply will go, and if the ship will stall or not.
Nice. Dan, your thoughts?
I'm sticking with they are in a very dangerous position, where they really could go either way at this point. I really want them to be successful. I really want them to continue to put out some great stuff, mostly for selfish reasons, because as long as the Switch is doing well, that means that there is a chance I will get a new pro wrestler.
I am very cautiously optimistic. I think that for all of their missteps, Nintendo has made some very, very positive strides. And the fact that, you know, Breath of the Wild has been the best-selling Zelda game in decades, I think is a pretty wonderful thing. People are buying their games, people are playing their games. And honestly, it's my most played system in a very long time. I can't put the damn thing down. I love it. So they do, it's their ball game to lose, but here's hoping that they don't. And that wraps this up. Boy, this was a long one. That's what she said.
No, she didn't.
No, she didn't. Not in my presence.
What she said was like, really? I mean, all right, I'll give it a shot.
It depends on how much of that $240 of pudding he brings to the table.
All right, guys, that's our show. Join us next week when Dan and I are going to talk about something Valentine's Day related, because who doesn't love Valentine's Day? Yeah, we totally have a plan. Believe me.
We 100% do.
Yeah, definitely we've talked about this before now. Once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, where can the good people find you?
At Geekade Dan.
And Barry, are you on the Twitters?
I am. I am at Hawk Hellfire. And we also have Nintendo Fuse on Twitter at Nintendo Fuse. So please give us a like.
Awesome. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our temporary intrepid editor, Dean, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. Barry, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Are there any final plugs you would like to make before we call it a night?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And like I said before, please you know, go over to NintendoFuse.com, go check out our YouTube, we're at Nintendo Fuse. Like our video, subscribe for all Nintendo content, as well as content with Chris. And, you know, who knows what the future is going to hold between Stone Age Gamer, Geekade, and Nintendo Fuse. Hopefully more collaborations.
We are the Microsoft and Nintendo of the year.
There you go.
All right, everybody. You're the PlayStation, Dan.
Oh, good. That means I don't have to play with anybody?
Nope. You have to play by
yourself
in the corner.
You have all the money, and you have all the money, and you don't have to play with anyone.
White privilege.
That's it, everybody. No. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.